Hello everyone, welcome to my channel Hiker Juju. Today is a very, very special day for me. I am delighted to have one of my best friends on the podcast with me today. So
Hello.
We're going to just have a little getter today. Hey, getter, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm good.
Good. Cool. I'm so happy to have you, buddy. It's been a long time. You know, when I started to think about recording some podcasts, I've always said that, you know, I'm going to have you on one of my podcasts, so I'm very, very happy. Gator and I have a close relationship, I think, on the trail. We spend a lot of time together, and we went through a lot of different things.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
So great, great memories that comes back in my head right now, but, you know, like, I'm just, just very happy to have you. And it's been quite a few weeks. I haven't recorded much podcast, but I was glad that we found a way to record that podcast today. So yeah, very, very happy. So yeah, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself, like who you are, you know, and stuff like that, and then yeah, we can move on how we've met and stuff like that.
Yeah, my name is Chance. My trail name is Later Gator. Juju, and most people just call me Gator. I'm from Louisiana. I met Juju on the PCT going southbound in 2018, and I'm 23 years old. So I met Juju when I was 22. So yeah, so still got a lot of time left to do more trails.
Yeah, but still, well, you have a lot of experience, you know, on the long distance hiking and just hiking itself, right? And though you're just 23 now, you've done a lot. You spend a lot of time on the trail, right?
So, yeah. The PCT was my, I guess technically my third through hike, but it was my first like big one.
So. Sounds good, right? And so I think, I mean, if I recall properly, like you are just because we have to tell people, like, when you go Sobo, like southbound on the PCT, you have to do like how many miles north? 40 miles? No, 30 miles?
I think 32
something. So you have to go north to tag the border and basically get to Mike Zero and then go southbound. So, so you have to do that flip flop for 30 plus miles.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you were going north, you were just entering the trail, and I was going south at the time. And then we just met, and then you caught up with me, and we just ended up spending a lot of time on and off, because I think we're gonna talk about that thing on the podcast. But you have a little bit of a different approach. Like, I think I'm waking up very early, and you don't mind like hiking at night or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, like sometimes you used to wake up a little bit later than me, and I was like leaving the campground, like the campsite. I was leaving that thing at very early in the morning at sunrise. And then like there was just like, you know, like I know he's going to just catch up with me later on during the day, or worst case, he's going to just show up at the campsite. So yeah, that was a lot of fun to spend to spend so much time together.
I'm kind of like a night owl, so it's hard for me to wake up in the morning, and it's hard for me to go to sleep at night. So even on trail, when you're tired all the time, it's hard for me to go to sleep. So, but yeah, like we were saying, I think you were the first person that I met on trail, because, you know, like when you're going northbound or when you're going southbound, like you said, you have to go 30 miles north because you're not allowed to come across the border. So you have to start in the US and walk to Canada and then turn around. But you had already turned around, and I was only like 1 mile in or 2 miles in, like going north to the border. And I saw you. You were the first person I met on trail, and I was like, "Hey man, like, how's the snow up there?" Because I was really curious about the snow. And you're like, "Oh, it's not bad. It's manageable, whatever." And I was like, "What's your name, Juju?" Blah blah blah. We met each other, and then you kept going. And then I think I met you again, like, Cascade Locks, right? You were with the brothers, with the Lightning Brothers. And then I didn't see you again until we were like almost out of Oregon, maybe.
I recall something that we were this how do you call that thing in English? Like the all of the kids that was at the summer camp.
Yeah, there's a summer camp that let us eat food, and then I talked to you there, but we didn't. I was with Kimley, and we just kind of like said hello, and then
true.
I think we started hiking together after Ashland,
yeah.
Oregon, and
yeah.
then we were together for like almost all of California. So
yeah, that was amazing. When I think about that, you know, like because I tell people that you know I spend a lot of time by myself, and I don't think we were like kind of always hiking together. But we were like kind of, you know, on and off. We were just catching up, and then I was behind you, you were behind me, and it was just like stretching away. And then I was a lot of fun. Like when I think about that, you know, I was kind of having my own space, but at the same time, I was so happy to have someone, you know, at night or, you know, at the campsite, we can talk about the next day or what's going to be your strategy, you know, for the next section, you know, like next resupply point and stuff like that. So I was that was good to have someone, and to be honest with you, I didn't expect this when I put myself in the PCT, and I knew I was about to meet some people, but I never thought of just having, you know, good feeling with a good friendship, and that was good, man. And I mean, maybe we can have the chance to talk about that, but yeah, we've been through we took a couple of zeros and together, and I mean, at the end, it's just great stuff. Like that was good. So like we said, like, can you just tell us about like the previous hike you've done and things like maybe in the right sequence, maybe like back in the first, how did you like put yourself into hiking pretty much?
So I didn't grow up hiking. My parents didn't really hike or anything and didn't travel much. But when I got to college, somebody invited me to go hiking, in this national forest in Louisiana, and we did like a 20-mile trail, and I was like, "Whoa, that's crazy!" So I wanted to do more, so I started doing hikes in Arkansas because I lived in North Louisiana, so it was a really close drive to like the Ouachita Mountains, and we did some like 30-mile trails and stuff like that, and I just wanted to keep doing it. So that summer, I decided that I would do the Tahoe Rim Trail. And I invited one of my friends, and we drove all the way from Louisiana to California. It took like 2 days, going nonstop almost. And as soon as we got to California, we just parked the car and started hiking. And I had no idea what I was doing. I had none of the right gear. I didn't do any research on gear. I just kind of brought what I thought I would need. And I was ultralight, but not on purpose. It was because I didn't have enough stuff, not because my gear was light. You know, I didn't have a sleeping pad. I didn't have, like, a real sleeping bag. I had, like, a Walmart, like, kind of crappy thing. But that was great. And it was really hard because I didn't have any of the right stuff. Didn't know what I was doing. Never hiked that much before, but I was still doing, like, 30 miles a day. And I was just destroyed me. It's only 170 miles. And then two summers later, I had a kind of a, over the summer, there was like a month where I didn't have to work. And so I was like, well, I wonder if I can fit something in here. And I made enough space where I tried to do the Pacific Northwest Trail, but it was just too snowy and stuff. So I went to Colorado and did the Colorado Trail. And I kind of want to do that one again someday because it's just a perfect length. Like there's something so fun about a short, long trail, you know, it's like right when it starts to get really hard, you're done. So it's like, it's really fun and it's only 500 miles and I did it. And I think the whole time I had been anticipating that I would want to try a long trail whenever I finished college. So when I finished, I had, enough time right after I graduated, before I had to start working. So I was like, okay, well, I'll do the PCT. So that's how I started. And
that's cool.
Yeah. So not people... a whole lot of experience before college, but then I hiked when I could, when I had time. So then, yeah.
So people have to understand, right? Like people who never done any thru hike. I mean, like first of all, like what do you define as a thru hike? But secondly, also is like people have to understand that they are step by step, right? You have to progress and you have to improve in the way that you have to learn from your mistakes. And because I've heard like stories back in the PCT, some noble were saying that at the Mexican border, like they saw some people like they never pitched a tent, right? They never put themselves into a 30 miles hike, and they were just putting themselves in a first thru hike like right away. So that's very risky, right? Like going just for a long distance hike. If you don't have any experience, so that's good. I mean, the way you just described that thing is just like you went like from you know like 30 miles plus with some people, and then maybe you went solo a little bit, and then you kind of improved your skills, your knowledge about the you know how to hike, how to you know like resupply and stuff like that, and that's good, right? I don't know what you think about that. What do you recommend as an approach, like to go on thru hike one day?
I think it's definitely possible to just hike with a thru hike as your first hike, but you have to, you know, you have to manage your expectations and everything. I think that's the main reason people quit. But I think it's definitely better to at least know your gear, you know. You can't really know what to expect on a thru hike as far as like the pain or how many miles you're going to do per day or how to fully prepare. Like you can't really do all of that fully until you're out there. But the one thing you can do is, you know how to pitch your tent, like know how your shoes feel, stuff like that. So I think, I mean, it's not 100, you know, you theoretically could just go out and through hike. But I think doing shorter trips, like even just like overnighters, like one or two nights mm-hmm. is going to like exponentially make you more prepared just because you know your gear. And I think knowing your gear is kind of key to like being prepared, because there's really no way to prepare for the other parts of the thru hike. You just have to at least know how to use what you have.
Yeah, true. And I mean, also the approach you have on the resupply, right? I mean, like when you go for long distance and the thru hike, it's, I mean, it can be very tricky, right? Like just to know how much food you need, like how much food you need to buy and how to pack your stuff. You know, all of these kind of things, you know, they come with the experience. I mean, that's maybe, I don't know what you think about that, but, you know, we talk about maybe the gear, but also, you know, how do you resupply? How do you look at, you know, how many days of, you know, what's going to be the next section? There are so many tricks, right? You learn on thru hike, just how to hitchhike, you know, like some people, they never done any hitchhiking, right? Back to town and stuff like that. And when you do a long distance hiking trail, you have to sometimes. There are a lot of things you have to learn. And I think, yeah, like it's very important, like for, I mean, if I give an advice to someone who wants to do a thru hike, is maybe like you said, maybe you should go for a couple of nights, overnight trips, you know, and learn, you know, from gears, but also like things you're going to be like, who you're going to be on the trail, right? I mean, but maybe we're going to cover quite a few things later on the podcast. And well, the next topic I want to talk about with you is like, do you have any like specific training? Like, what do you do? Like, you know, like, I don't know, on a regular basis, but also like before a long distance hiking trail, maybe if you just go for a week or two, do you know anything special? I know you are in shape and you have the shape of someone who can hike and can run easily, but like, do you do anything special?
For me, I don't do any like, training as far as like I think the best way to train for a thru hike is just to put your backpack on and do a lot of miles, but I didn't have anywhere to hike really before I did the PCT. I was in college and like I lived in Louisiana, there's no trails or anything, and it's really flat, so if I didn't get the chance, if I got the chance to go out for a weekend or something, you know, like just one weekend of hiking, I don't think would help me very much. So mostly I just ran, and I run. I mean, I'm already a runner. So like you said, I run a lot, and I'm a distance runner, and I just try to put like a lot of miles on to build my cardio because I think if you have the cardio going into it, I feel like the carrying the weight is something that's harder to prepare for. So I think that's another one of those things where you're not really gonna know how it feels until you're on the trail carrying the pack. That's something that's gonna hurt either way. So I think the most important thing really is to just be fit and have the cardio for it and be in shape. And just yeah, just be in shape. But I think if you do have the chance to backpack on a regular basis and put your backpack on and go hike, I think that's ultimately the best way.
Okay.
But to me, the harder part was mentally preparing for it though, because I was like, not sure if I would have people around me or if the snow would be scary and stuff like that. And it was more just like kind of like controlling my fears more than anything. So yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when I talk, when my friends ask me about my thru hike and stuff like that, I tell them, I don't know what you think about that, but I tell them that the body is an amazing machine, right? It's body-wise, I think it took me, I don't know about you, but maybe 2 weeks, maybe on the PCT, 10 days, 2 weeks to like be like, I don't know, like my body has kind of a memory, and he knew I was kind of. Okay, he's gonna do it again, like 30 something miles every day, bam, 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 on and on and on. But mentally, I thought that I was strong, and I was not actually, because mentally, like spending so much time by yourself, like alone sometimes, and just like you said, like having the snow, and especially at the beginning in Washington, going sobo, that was something new to me. I never hiked on the snow, so I think the challenge was more mentally, and that's the tough part because you can't really. I don't know, how can you train like mentally, right? It's like body wise you can run, like you said, right? But mentally it's tough.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I guess just know your limits, because the only reason that I was able to like kind of tell myself, okay, like calm down on the snow, because I'm really scared of snow because I'm from Louisiana and there's no snow. So the only reason I was able to tell myself that, I think, was because I knew that other people were walking on it. And I knew that they could do it, and I saw them doing it. And then, also on the Colorado Trail, I had done something similar. And I think it's just, I mean, I don't think there's really a way to prepare for it, but I think it's just in the moment, having confidence and seeing other people do it. Because the main thing for me was, like you said, like it's scary when you're by yourself, and like crossing those passes and stuff. When I was with people, it didn't seem as intimidating because, I was like seeing them do it, and I was like, I'll just do what they do. But when I was by myself, I was like, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Am I gonna fall here? So I think it's really just having confidence and knowing what your limits are, but you can't really know your limits unless you see, other people doing it, I guess. So.
Yeah, true,
But
true.
to me, that is the hardest thing to prepare for. I mean, like we had the fires, and that was mentally really draining with the smoke and the snow in Washington, and then the few times that it rained, and just like the stretches with no water in Oregon and Southern California. So yeah, mentally it's just like having to tell yourself not to be afraid of certain things that you're just naturally afraid of.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing actually. Like you talked about the water. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, the discipline you have into like not drinking a lot of water to keep going and not have, like you don't have to, I don't know, carry like 6+ liters or stuff like that. So maybe you can just describe a little things about the PCT, and that would be interesting for the people who are listening to the podcast maybe.
Yeah, so in Southern Oregon and in Southern California, there's just stretches where there's not really any water. There's no natural water sources. A lot of times the locals will leave out water for the hikers, which is, It'd be so hard to do it without that. You'd have to carry 10 liters in some places. But yeah, so there, I only carried, I think the max number I carried was 3 liters. I think. But luckily, whenever we got to the desert, you know, it wasn't as hot as it is for the North Bounders. So maybe I didn't drink as much water, and I probably didn't drink as much water as I should have most of the time anyway. But contrary to that, in Washington and in the Sierras and stuff, there was like almost too much water, you know? I remember in Washington, if you wanted to, you could just not carry a bottle and just drink water whenever you wanted. It was pretty crazy, but it's that's what's cool about the PCT is like how drastically the landscapes change. You know, like you're in this like crazy alpine wilderness in Washington, and then you get to Oregon and it turns into like a high desert with no water. And then you hit NorCal and then you're in like small hills, and then you hit the Sierras and it's like barren alpine crazy. Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, the water situation changed a lot pretty often.
And did you expect this? Like, when you were like kind of working on the logistics of the PCT?
Yeah, I think I knew that Southern California would be pretty hard to get water, but what I didn't expect was Southern Oregon. I remember there being like a maybe a 21-mile stretch with no water in Southern Oregon. And it's like to me, like being someone who's not from that area, like my thoughts about Oregon are always like, oh, it's rainy, it's wet, like everywhere is, you know, it's like coastal weather. But that's really only like the Portland, like the valley, like where Portland is and the coast and stuff. Like the rest of Oregon is like a desert, you know? So it was I didn't expect it there, and when I had to ask North Bounders where the water was and stuff, so
And did you like reward yourself when you were getting to a water source? Like, I want you to talk about like maybe the kind of drinks you were drinking, you know, like chocolate things,
Oh
you know.
yeah, me and Juju would like we would like our chocolate milk. Yeah, me and you neither of us use stoves, so we always had to drink like cold stuff. But I mean, when you're on trail, it all tastes good anyway, you know. So I think my favorite one was I would get like a half a liter of water and put like two instant coffees in it, and then like two of the Carnation like breakfast mixes, you know. I would get the vanilla ones and put it in there, and it would be like a vanilla latte. Like a vanilla latte, and I would just shake it up and drink it cold. And then also the Swiss Miss hot chocolate packets that we drank. You know, you put like two of them in a half a liter of water and shake it for like 5 minutes. And then, but yeah, whenever we would always say, oh, when we get to this water source, then we can stop and have chocolate milk. So that always.
People is gonna listen to that. It's gonna say like these guys are crazy. They you know like they love like that thing, which is disgusting. Back home, I never drink that thing. But when I was on trail, I was dreaming about that, and I was kind of I knew I had this in my backpack, and I was keeping that like I don't know, like you are a kid, right? And you have something you want to keep for yourself, and like and you say I'm gonna just open the box for, you know, I don't know, like when that's gonna be that the perfect time. And I was
Yeah.
just getting to the water source, and I was just happy, man. Just trying to, yeah, like just open that little pack of Carnation, open that thing, put it in the bottle, and just shake it up and just drink it.
Yeah, it's like giving a dog a treat, you know.
Yeah,
It's
kind of.
like,
Yeah. And like I remember like Gimli was having kind of the same thing, but I think he was more drinking coffee, I think. I don't know, I forgot. I
remember, but Gimli had a stove, so he was drinking a lot better.
No, he was
So
drinking the tea as well, right? He was putting the tea bags.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was making tea, and then I remember Salty would drink the yerba mate. He had the yerba mate
Oh,
bags. Yeah,
all right, yeah, so.
he gave me a lot of those in Southern California, and that was, I remember I put three of the yerba mate bags in like a liter of water the day that I did Mount San Jacinto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was that stuff gets you going. It's got a lot of caffeine in it. It's good.
All right. Well, big shout out to Salty if he's listening. I'm sure he's gonna listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you, Salty, for what you gave to Gator.
Thank you for the yerba mate.
Yeah, I'm sure he's gonna laugh about that. All right, that's good. Well, that's something to consider, right? Having the discipline on the water, because you have to keep the water, and especially if you, because ideally you're gonna just sleep. I mean, your campsite is gonna be next to a water source, but you know sometimes you can't. So that's some of the things you have to be very careful on, because if you drink a lot of water, you're gonna just sweat, and then you're gonna just say like, I don't know, like 20. Oh, sometimes 25 miles is a long stretch. Like not having water, it can be a problem, right? Can be an issue, because like having less food is I think you can handle it, right? But water is key, right? It's like it's a can turn into like a massive issue pretty quickly. So
yeah, you can die from no water, but you can't really die from no food. And you know,
no,
I remember a few times I ran out of food in the Sierras. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, maybe? Like, that's
yeah.
good experience to share with others, right?
Yeah. So the Sierras had really long food hauls. Like, maybe the longest one was, like, I don't know, 100 miles or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I'd have to look at my notes. But there was a few that were really long. And I had the small bear can, the BV450. Did you have the same one as me?
Yeah. Same,
yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, I couldn't get enough in it, and I kept running out of food. I think it's just because I was eating too much, because I couldn't discipline myself to, like, ration my calories, but I kept eating all of my food. I guess because when you get in the Sierras, it gets so much harder out of nowhere that you're burning a lot more calories, so you eat more, but I was burning so many calories and just blowing through my food. And there were a few times where, yeah, like I like ran out of food, or I was like, oh, I only have one bar for the day or something. Like I remember one time we were going over Glen Pass, I think, and it was our last pass before we got to like a place where we could resupply. And I remember just dying going over the pass. And you were pretty far behind me when I started the pass, but you caught up to me on the pass because I was just going so slow. And I was just so tired because I had like no food left. And you're like, Gator, come on, man, we gotta go. And you gave me a bar. And I just was so thankful. It was like a chocolate Cliff bar. But I was so thankful because I had like no food, and I just couldn't. I was like so tired and couldn't do anything. So food, no food can be a problem, but it's not like life or death, you know. Like, I would have been okay. I was just miserable. But
yeah.
No water. Luckily, I was okay on the PCT. I never had any instances where I got sick from having no water. But one time I was doing a trail in college in Big Bend, in Texas. And it was like a 30-mile trail, and part of it goes through like the desert floor. And I didn't run out of water, but I just couldn't drink enough water fast enough, and I got heat exhaustion, and that was, you know, probably the one of the most miserable days of my life. So, yeah, not drinking enough water can be pretty detrimental. So you always have to check a gut hook and like make sure you know where the water is and plan your day around the water stops and stuff like that. So.
And talk to the people who are going north the opposite way, maybe,
yeah.
And ask them, you know, well, you know, the type of source you're gonna meet or you're gonna have on the trail. That's also a good thing. So
yeah, a lot of the sources are really nasty too. So just make sure you have your filter. So
yeah, sometimes I was just a bathtub, like just from cows were just drinking water there, and that was kind of, you know, like. I was very tricky, like I was very nasty sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, talking about food, so you most of the hike you are going stoveless. So can you just describe, because I'm sure most of the people on the listening to the podcast do not know what is a stoveless approach. on the hike?
So a lot of cold soaking. I know you cold soaked more than I did, so you get your ramen or your potatoes or whatever you have.
Couscous, yeah.
Yeah, and you put it in a peanut butter jar or some kind of container with cold water, and you just let it sit for an hour or a few hours while you're hiking. So then by the time you stop, you know the food's ready. I did that in Washington, but I think I was just lazy, so I stopped wanting to clean out the container. So I just started going completely no cook. So I would get tortillas, and roll up goldfish with something, in a tortilla and eat it. Or roll up tuna in a tortilla or cheese or some kind of, just random things that have a lot of calories. And then a lot of bars, like a lot of Clif bars, a lot of the, I remember at Safeway they had the Tiger Milk bars. They're like really cheap, like 80 cents or something. And I would get like a lot of those. And then candy bars and stuff like that. Really stuff that's like, it's hard to strike the balance between being nutritious and just eating calories, because you want to, it's all about shoveling calories in your mouth, but you also want to be nutritious, and you want to eat things that are going to keep your body healthy and keep your body going. So, enough nuts and make sure you eat fruit when you're in town because you don't get enough vitamin C. And so it's hard. I've been thinking about that a lot, especially after you and Salty's podcast, y'all talked about a more sustainable ways to eat on trail. And I've been thinking about that a lot because when you're through hiking, you do create a lot of trash. So
True,
it's
true.
probably still less than a normal person in normal life, but still for the amount of, the amount of junk food that you make a lot of trash. So I've been thinking about that a lot. And yeah. But also I guess the burritos, remember we would eat the burritos from dollar stores that were like 69-cent frozen burritos, and we would just let them thaw out in our pack. And whenever they were, they would stay good for like a few weeks because it's all just like fake, fake stuff in it. So, a bean burrito.
That's
So.
a thing which is pretty hard because you, like you said, right? You need the right calories amount, and also you need the right, a good thing, the good food, to keep your body going. But when you get in town, and we can quickly talk about the town vortex, right? And you get to the town and you just want to eat everything. And you should go maybe for some vegetables and maybe some stuff. And I'm vegetarian, so it's I didn't eat meat, tuna, or anything like that. So I had to go to get my proteins from another source, right? But I was getting in town, and the only thing I don't know, I just wanted to eat ice cream and stuff like that, right? And I was, for the very first time of my life, I was just able to eat everything I want, and I didn't gain fat. I was just like, my body was just burning everything. So, but also, I'm just glad that, Salty brought that thing, as having a better way to eat stuff, and when we're on the trail, because we all love, the nature, and we want to make sure we the trail will be we will be there, sorry, for a long, very long time. But when we think about that, we have a lot of packagings and a lot of stuffs, and I think we're all doing a good job in the way that we pack our stuff and garbage, and we just put that thing, when we get in town. But when you think about that, it's a lot of trash, right? It's a lot of
Yeah, you're still putting it back into the environment, even
true.
if you wait until you get to town. So, yeah, that's a tough thing because I mean like most food that you can carry that stays good comes in like a wrapper. So
True, true.
it's hard to do that. But I've been reading like some just random things on, like what to take that doesn't require as much single-use plastic and stuff like that, but it's pretty hard to do that. And I'm vegetarian now as well, so I'll probably need tips from you whenever I start my next through hike. About it's easy when you get in town, but when you're on trail, I feel like I was just eating so much meat on the
True,
PCT,
true.
so I don't know what I would replace it with.
Because I thought about that, and I was thinking maybe I can buy in bulk, so I can buy big stuff in you know, big bags, and then I can, but then I'm gonna have to do a lot of Ziploc. And the bulk, the problem I found with the bulk is, like, basically I was kind of thinking that if I buy that thing, that means that I'm gonna have to ship myself boxes. That may be costly, but plus suddenly that means that I'm gonna have to do it every time the same thing, right? And I don't know about you on the PCT or when you went for a long, like, few weeks trail. I think sometimes I was fed up with things I was eating, and I my taste was changing a lot. And I was kind of, you know, a lot of up and down. And sometimes I was just fed up of just, like, I couldn't smell just oatmeal, like Clif Bars or stuff like that. And I was kind of, you know, I was kind of very, very close to vomit. Like, just like, okay, well, if you can put, like, just a certain flavor close to my nose, I was just I had too much.
there's like certain, I think bars I never got tired of, but there are things like peanut butter and where I just couldn't smell it, or else I would just be like, my gag reflex would kick in. But then again, I would eat anything if I was hungry enough. But at the same time, yeah, like sending packages, I don't know, unless it was like really necessary, I don't know if I would recommend people to send a lot of packages, because like you said, you have no idea what you're gonna be craving. Like, I crave really weird things that I never ate like in normal life. So like you never know what you're gonna be craving. And also sometimes if you're packing food for something you're gonna eat several months from now, like you don't know how hungry you're gonna be, or if you need more
True.
food or something like that. So
The how much you're gonna, I mean, you're gonna need, because sometimes I was getting in town and I was like, okay, well, I know the last 5 days, you know, I don't know, I just need more food, so I'm gonna buy a little bit of more than what I expected. But if I was just, I don't know, having someone, one of my friends shipping a box from Canada, I would have packed my stuff, you know, like you said, like a few months ahead of this, and I would have probably made a mistake by being short and not having enough food in that box. So that's a good thing. And I think maybe Radish, he's going to listen to that podcast. So hi to Zach. And because I know that he was, I don't know how, if he's gonna make it or not, by the way, but he was going on the PNT this summer, and I don't know what he's gonna do. Maybe a section of it. But what he did, and we talked about that thing on the podcast, is, like, he bought himself, like, a lot of different bars, like Clif Bars, all of the brands on the market. And he was kind of testing and trying to taste all of them, like every day, and trying to see, you know, if some of them he likes this flavor, like macadamia, whatever. This one is chocolate chips. This one is peanut butter. So he was kind of trying these things because, like you said, like, I never drink, like, soft drinks, you know, like Diet Coke or stuff like that. And I don't know why on the PCT I was kind of, when I get in town, I'm gonna buy myself like a 1 liter, like, bottle in a gas station right away. And I never ever drink this sugar stuff right back home. And I don't know why my body was craving that. I had that thing in my mind. I was just calling, just, I don't know, Diet Coke or, you know.
Dr. Pepper.
Oh yeah, you were the guy. You were the Gato was the Dr. Pepper guy. Yeah, true,
And
true.
energy drinks. I like never, before the PCT, I never drank like Red Bull or Monster like that. But when I would get to town, that's like all I wanted. I just wanted all the sugar in those and stuff,
How
you know.
come? How come? How come? That doesn't make sense. That's crazy. Yeah,
I
it's
know,
crazy.
because I feel like on trail I still ate tons of sugar, so I don't know
Ah,
if I was
yeah.
craving sugar or just like something that was cold and sweet, or I don't know. So
Yeah, and just to close the loop on the food topic, like, I maybe I'm gonna laugh asking you that thing, but, like, can you tell us a little bit more about, like, Salty and Relish did it with you, like the Mac 70, you know, what was that section like? Can you tell us? Like, I mean, sometimes, like, you have to make yourself, like, some challenges, you know, side challenges and stuff like that. And I was just like, when I saw you guys did, like, I said, like, these guys are just crazy. Like, so what did you do? Can you explain us what is the Mac 70?
Yeah, it's like a side quest on a video game, but So there's 70 miles from Cajon Pass, where the
Yes.
McDonald's is, to Big Bear,
Yeah.
and it's we tried to resupply fully just on McDonald's. So, like, instead of buying a resupply or something like that, only buy McDonald's foods for the next 70 miles. And I bought, like, I don't know, maybe 50 chicken nuggets and like maybe 10 or 15 sandwiches, like burgers or whatever. But I ran out of food. I was just, it tasted so good. Like, McDonald's is really cheap and bad for you and bad for the environment, but it tastes so good. And so whenever I bought all of it, like, it tasted so much better than my usual resupply food that I just kept eating and eating and eating. And I think the first night that we were out, I think I ate all of my chicken nuggets. I ate like all 50 chicken nuggets. So I was just so hungry and eating all this McDonald's. And I remember the next night we stayed at the hot springs,
The hot springs, yeah.
Deep Creek Hot Springs. And we were just sitting naked in the hot springs eating McDonald's. And I had like McGriddles and like all their breakfast sandwiches, and just sitting in this hot water with like you and Alpine Pat and like a few
Yeah.
people, just eating McDonald's in this natural hot spring. It's just such a weird thing. But I ended up running out of food because it just tasted so good that I ate all of it. And at like the last day, I had like no food, and I just had to get to Big Bear. So yeah, that was interesting. I forgot about that. That makes
Yeah,
sense.
do you remember that that dog? You left your bag, like your backpack, on the rock, like,
Oh yeah.
and the dog was coming.
Dog kept trying to eat the McDonald's, yeah.
And you were counting every single piece of McNuggets you had left, and there was the.
I was afraid this dog would just steal all of my McDonald's, because he kept barking at me, and when I walked away from my backpack, he was messing with my pack. So that's interesting.
All right. So that was a long topic, like the food, but like food is very important, right? On the trail,
Yeah.
and it can be challenging. I don't know if you remember my friend Fabrice, who came for a week or something, and I think after like 5 days being with me, he told me like, okay, mentally I can understand that it's been a dream for you, and body-wise it's tough, but he said I can manage that, it's all right. But he told me like, look man, like Julian, like food is like you have to pretty much eat the same thing like for 4 months, right? He told me like this is the kind of things I can quit, right? I can quit because of this, just because like the food is too, I don't know, it's just too much mentally. I can't get away from just having that food thing in my mind. And for some people it can be very, very hard, right? What kind of food do you have and stuff like that. But it was not that bad for me. I think I was okay. But sometimes I was just getting in town and I was kind of, just I want to eat everything. And so we were just walking into a Walmart, we're doing the resupply, having an extra stuff. And then we were just like getting, as soon as we were getting out of that Walmart grocery store, we're just trying to sit somewhere very close to the store, just eating everything right away. And I
Yeah,
was,
eating and charging our phones.
yeah. So that's the life of a thru hiker, right? It's charging your electronics and just eating everything, right? So anyway, so yeah, food was definitely a good topic, and I mean, we could have gone like for telling people on the podcast that, also like you meet like so many people who are giving you food, right? Like, and
Yeah.
you
Trail
meet
angels.
yeah, trail angels, and you meet like people also on the trail who are going like for a weekend hike, and they're gonna pack like 7 days of food, right? So they're gonna say like, oh yeah, all right, I can tell, like looking at you, like you need some extra stuff. And they were like having like cool stuff, like we maybe sometimes expensive, like, and we didn't want to buy, and sometimes it was just different than what we had.
Yeah, I remember the on the when we were on the JMT section. So like for a lot of people listening, the John Muir Trail is like a 200-mile trail, and like 100 and something miles of it runs parallel with the PCT. So you're running into these people a lot who are only out for like maybe a week or two, you know, and they knew that you were a PCT hiker because you had a beard and you had a really small backpack and you were sunburned and really dirty. So, you know, like you would go up to them and they would have a big backpack with a lot of food in it, and they'd be like, "Oh, where are you trying to go?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I'm going to Bishop tonight, or I'm trying to get to Bishop by tomorrow because I don't have any food left. And I just want to get to Bishop so I can buy more food." And they're like, "Oh, here's some of my food. Here, take it. I have too much. You can." So yeah, that was good. I got resupplied off of JMT hikers a few times. So it was
Yeah, I mean, like so many stories about that. Like, I mean, I think we were together, like in this McDonald's. Like the one of the grandma, like just walked in into the McDonald's and she bought like ice cream for everyone.
Yes,
That was very sweet, very very nice, very kind. And anyway, so I think we can do an entire podcast and just food stories and stuff like that. So yeah, food is definitely something to consider when you go for a hike. If we move on, can we talk about like any, like I would call that in common mistakes, but any mistakes that you would like maybe you made yourself or you saw from other hikers? You know, I would say like I don't know, leave no trace. We talked about that. Maybe like I mean, I'm talking maybe to give you a few ideas. It's just like I saw some people maybe starting too strong, too fast maybe, and they were like kind of injuring themselves and having injuries and stuff right at the beginning, having stress fractures and stuff like that. That can be a common mistakes. You know, you have to go slowly and, you know, like steady. Have you done any like mistakes or things like you would recommend to anyone who wants to do a long hike for weeks or stuff like that? Do you have anything in
Yes,
mind?
I think that was one of them for me. It was just going, trying to go too hard too early, because I had done other hikes, you know, where if you're only doing 500 miles, like the Colorado Trail, you can start off doing a lot, and like it's gonna take, you know, if you do a lot at the beginning, you're gonna be done in like a month. So by the time you start getting injured, you're already done. So, but on the PCT, you're in it for the long haul. So you have to keep in mind, like, how am I going to feel a month from now? How am I going to feel 2 months from now? So I remember just coming out of the gate, like, trying to do like at least 25 every day in Washington. And that's just, for not having hiked in like a year at that point, that just wasn't good, because I had some pretty bad, like, tendonitis in my knees and stuff like that, just coming out too hard. So you have to, even if you know your limits and you know that you can hike, you know, 30 miles a day, you have to tell yourself that, you know, you have to think about the long term and think about the fact that, you know, starting off slow is gonna help you hike more further down the line. So I think that was one big mistake that I made. I think another thing that I just see so many people make, and it ends a lot of people's through hikes, is just like managing your expectations. You know, like, I think a lot of people go out there and they think it's going to be like, not necessarily easy, but they think it's going to be like really like beautiful and carefree and stuff the whole time. But I mean, there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of like fear and stuff that comes in with it. You know, when you're climbing a really snowy pass, or when you're hiking around a wildfire, or when you're worried about where your next water is, like, you know, those parts of the hike can like cause you a lot of stress. So I think people thinking that they're gonna go out there thinking it's gonna be this just beautiful, carefree experience the whole time is not realistic. But I think it is. I think even the hard parts of it are rewarding and enjoyable. So I wouldn't want to scare anyone away. But I also wouldn't want anyone to end their through hike because they think it's going to be a lot easier than it is. So I think that's another one. And then also with leave no trace stuff, a lot of people don't bury their poop, man. Like a lot. I remember one day, like, we came across just like a turd just like sitting on the trail, right? Like, like just laying in the middle, and it was a human turd. It wasn't like a bear or something. So it's like people just pooping out in the middle of the trail, or like not burying it, or like when you pick up a rock to do, like, you know, if you want to put a stake on your tent and like you want to put a rock to like weigh it down a little bit, you pick up the rock and someone just put a rock on top of their poop. And so it's that's one that I see a lot too. So if you're going
Okay.
hiking, make sure you dig it 6 inches deep, put your poop in there and cover it up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's a good thing. Yeah, you're right, actually. I mean, there are so many people who are just like thinking, you know, they don't pay attention to these things, and it can be very bad for the wildlife, and just for the people like just respecting. But like Salty was saying this, like, you can't imagine how many poop you have in on the PCT, right? Like, so many people are hiking that trail every year, and so it yeah, that's crazy.
I think the COVID outbreak, if it's good for anything, will be good for the trails, you know, because people aren't allowed on the trails this year. So, I mean, while it's sad that we have to deal with a pandemic at all, like, I think a lot of wildlife and stuff is gonna get like a break, you know,
True.
from thousands of people walking up and down, and it's gonna give the trails some like rehabilitation time. So, especially on like the more popular ones, like the PCT or the AT, because I know the AT has like a big poop problem. So,
Oh yeah.
yeah. So.
Okay. Well, interesting. And another one I thought about was to you know, so many people are making mistakes. They don't really take care of their body, like stretching maybe, or maybe like like, I don't know about you, but like in my tent at night, I was trying to think about like doing massage to my feet, and trying to think about like stretching my back a little bit, especially when I was getting out of town. You know, like my backpack was so heavy. That was tough, because I was used to have a pretty small backpack. I mean, that was not too much, and then like suddenly I was just doing my resupply, and I was kind of having a huge backpack, and it was very heavy, a lot of water and stuff like that. So I was stretching my back, and I saw that thing as a common mistake. So, like, people are just exhausted. They are very, very, very tired at night, because they bike like 30 plus miles, 35 maybe, or 40, and you know, they just I want to sleep. I want to get my food and go to sleep. But I was giving myself like a 10 minutes sometimes. I know it's like, it's 10 minutes doesn't sound much, but when you are on the trail and you are just exhausted, very tired, you just, I don't know, you don't want to do it. But I was kind of trying to do it, force myself to stretch a little bit in my tent before going to sleep. I don't know about you, what you did for your body.
Yeah, I didn't really stretch that much. I as a runner, like in normal life, I still don't stretch as much as I should. So the on trail, I stretched a little bit, especially when I was having tendonitis in my knees and stuff. But I think one thing for me was taking care of my feet, because I did stretch and stuff when I felt that I needed to. And I think I would recommend most people stretch more than I did. But another thing is, as far as taking care of your body, was just taking care of my feet, because I kept getting, you know, like I would just let my feet stay wet and stuff, and like I wouldn't wash out my socks. So then I had kind of like sandpaper under my feet, and then, you know, like my feet would get sweaty, and then it would grind on my feet, and I got like a few like bad like foot infections and stuff because I just wasn't taking care of it. So I would tell people every chance you get, wash out your extra pair of socks, and then just, you know, hang them up to dry, and then like on your pack or something, and just change your socks a lot, because I mean, I was just wearing the same pair for days and just wouldn't wash them, just because I was too lazy, I guess, when we'd get to water stops. So I think that's a big thing for me, because man, I remember when I was in Sierra City, my feet were so swollen and red, like I was getting like early signs of like trench foot on them, just from having wet sores on my feet constantly. I just like was not taking care of my feet. So I think
Yeah.
That's the big one for me. But definitely stretch more than I did. And then also like taking care of yourself mentally too, because I remember there were times where I just really needed a break, but I would tell myself not to take a zero because I didn't wanna like waste time or like spend too much money in town or something. So I wouldn't let myself take zeros. But the times that I did force myself to take a zero, it ended up being really good for my body, but also just for my mind and like, you know,
True.
making the trail more enjoyable again. Because I remember whenever you and Marathon saw me in Southern Oregon, right before we got to Ashland, I passed you guys and y'all saw me, and I was just like a zombie because I'd been by myself for most of Oregon. I was with Gimli sometimes, but for the most part, I was by myself, so I was mentally kind of strained. But also, I was doing like 30 plus miles every day, so I was physically really tired. So I remember you and Marathon telling me like, hey man, you should when you get to Ashland, you should take a break, man. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So
Yeah, it's very hard.
taking a zero when you need it. So.
Yeah, but it's hard to because you know, like it's very easy to say that thing, you know, when we are back home. But when you are on the trail, you are just in a like I don't know, a vortex maybe. Like you are in a huge wave of just emotions and like doing so many things at the same time and I don't know, like you I mean back in Southern Oregon you are like after what, like a month and something, month and a half. Plus close to 2 months maybe. So yeah, you know it's you've been through a lot and it's very hard for you to take the right decision, right? To be like you, sometimes we have a lack of lucidity just trying to take the right decision because like you said, you know we spending a lot of time in town is going to be like costly and maybe budget-wise that might be an issue. Also, it can make you out of the trail of the original like adventure. But sometimes you need it, right? And trying to find the right balance between I need a zero, my body needs it, my mind needs that break, but also trying to keep focused on the just the entire the whole experience. It's never easy, right? It's tough. I don't
Yeah.
know.
I remember we took the most memorable zeros were the two at in Truckee at the brother's house, but also the two that we took in Old Station when I had norovirus.
Yeah, true, true. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like maybe that's a good experience for other hikers who's gonna listen to the podcast.
Yeah, that was me and Juju's like bonding moment, but I think we had just gotten done with Hat Creek Rim in Northern California, so we had been kind of like in this more dry stretch. We just left Bernie, I think, Bernie, California. We had stayed. There's a church there that lets hikers stay with them, so we stayed at the church and then we hiked out. And then I think the next day we would get to this small town with just a restaurant and a gas station called Old Station, and but the night in between those two towns, I just like in the middle of the night, I just started feeling really sick and throwing up, and it got worse and worse. And the next morning, I had like a really bad fever and was throwing up and had a headache and just like all the symptoms of like a stomach flu, you know. So it was so hard to hike. We had like maybe 10 miles left to go. And then I remember we were with Sancho, the big Irish guy. And he kept telling me, he was like, let me carry your pack, let me carry your pack. Because my pack was just a tiny thing compared to his. And he was like a huge guy. And we had like maybe just a few miles to go. So I handed him my pack and he just put it on the front of his body and it was like nothing for him. We ended up getting out, but I remember we got to Old Station and it was sad because we had to tell Comrade and Gimli and Sancho like bye because they had to keep going. But I'm really thankful that you stayed with me because that would have been a man by myself, that would have been horrible. But yeah, Juju stayed with me and I think we spent two like maybe we spent the rest of that day and then the rest of the next day in Old Station just sleeping on the ground. And the ranger, the lady that worked at the visitor center there, she let us sleep next to her camper. And she gave us like drinks and stuff.
Oh, very nice.
And then, oh yeah, and then we ended up, you took me to the hospital that first night because it just kept getting worse and worse. And we thought that I had Giardia. So there was a hospital, like a, maybe like a 15 minute or 20 minute drive from Old Station. So she drove us to the hospital and they ended up telling me that it was just norovirus. So I was like, okay. So luckily my health insurance covered that because those hospital visits are expensive in the US. But So then we got back and I just laid on the ground in Old Station for like 2 days, just laid on the ground, throwing up and having diarrhea. But Juju stayed with me and Juju brought me Gatorade and like, yeah. And I remember eventually while we were just sitting there, the brothers and Owell and Bella and a few people that we know caught up to us who were behind us, and they caught up because I was taking the day off. And
yeah,
I remember they ended up wanting to take a zero because they were had some like minor leg injuries and stuff. So
yeah,
they took that second zero with us. So it ended up working out. So then we had a kind of a group of people to leave Old Station with. And yeah, when we left, I still felt kind of bad, I guess, because I was really dehydrated and kind of feeling like the aftermath of being sick. But the next 2 days were still really terrible, but we ended up making it. And then I remember we made it to that resort or something, Drake's Bad Guest Ranch or something like that.
Yeah.
And like that's really when I started to feel like normal again. I started feeling okay. But I later found out that it's because of the water in Bernie. And like I think Vortex got sick in Bernie too, and like a few other people did, because Bernie, like, their septic tanks are really old. So, like, their water has, you know, like, the septic tanks seep into the groundwater. So, okay. if you're not from there, the water can be really, like, can make you sick.
Yeah.
So, luckily, y'all didn't get sick, but I got, that was bad. So
That was bad. That was tough. Like, just to see you and see you like that. And yeah, that was bad, but that was a good experience at the same time, because we got time, and I got time to relax and have time to relax as well on my side and talk to my family, my friends, and catching up with everyone, and that was good. I think I needed that break. Maybe, who knows? Maybe if I didn't take that few days off, you know, I don't know. I was quite happy to be back on the trail. I was so excited to be back after that. And I was happy to see Toad, yeah, the brothers, Bella.
Yeah, that's when our new group kind of formed up.
True. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a good experience, I think. And I was kind of changing group also, and that was funny, I think. And we got a chance to see Gimli again because he was having a section with his mom, like maybe a few weeks later or stuff like that. So, you know, everything worked well, and I don't know, yeah, that was a good thing. Old Station was a very, very small town, just a gas station actually, but we got a lot of food. The guy was very, very nice, and yeah, that was a good thing. So yeah, great story. If we talk about the gears, and like, I know I want you to talk about like your ultralight approach and what you have, you know, like as a backpack and stuff like, and what you like and why do you go this way, and maybe like the best few items you have in your backpack, things you're never gonna trade away. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the gear?
Yeah, so I my base weight is, I guess, like six and a half or 7 pounds. But that's, you know, you always have to brag about your base weight when you're ultralight. So there's my brag. But yeah, for me, it's less about like the weight or like the, you know, just like the ounce. Like, I'm not like super hardcore on counting ounces and stuff. For me, it's more about just like having less stuff and having a simpler setup so that I don't have to think about having as much stuff with me, because to me, like, having like the more items I have, the more of a burden it is, like physically but also just mentally, and that's in regular life and on trail as well. So for for me, it was mainly just having only what I needed and what I knew that I was going to use. So, you know, I had my basic big three. I had my backpack, which I started off with my Gossamer Gear Kumo. I love that backpack, but it was really old by that point. So I knew that I would probably have to get a new pack on trail. So I ended up getting a Palante, and I used a Palante for most of the PCT. So I had that. And then I had my quilt. So I had a quilt instead of a sleeping bag. I had an Enlighten Equipment quilt. And, you know, that cuts a good bit of weight, and that's a simpler setup. And then my sleeping pad was only half. It was a torso length. So, you know, that cuts the sleeping pad weight in half. And then I use the Hexamid. So it's a tent, but it's kind of like more like a tarp. And it's kind of a pain to set up, but once you have it set up, it's nice. So really it was just about item count. But outside of those things, I didn't really have many other things. You know, I had my shirt, my normal shirt that I wore every day, but other than that, I only had my hoodie. And then, instead of like, having shorts with like a, you know, like pants and stuff like that, I had my shorts, and then I had like a pair of leggings that I wore if it was cold or like when I was sleeping or something. Yeah. And like just having one of each thing, you know, is except for socks, but, you know, only having what I need. I didn't have a stove, but, I think it's 'cause I don't know why I enjoy having less stuff. I don't think there's like a, I don't have like a deep meaning to it or anything. I will say, like, I think the thing that influenced me to like get into hiking, like growing up, I played a lot of Legend of Zelda, like the video game.
Yeah.
And like in that game, like you have to like complete these tasks and like travel really far and like do these puzzles and solve these problems with like a very limited number of items. Like you only have like a few items in your inventory.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of like maybe the subconscious reason I wanted less stuff, but I also just like having a small backpack. So
And you are, and like during the trail, like you switch. I mean, you had a fanny pack. Like maybe some people are wondering if it's a plus, if it's a good thing. Like, why do you like fanny pack?
I tried the fanny pack because I've seen other people wearing one, and it just seemed convenient to have like all of my phone and everything like right in front of me. Okay. And so when we got to Mammoth, I bought a fanny pack at a thrift store for like $2 or something. And I ended up liking it a lot, but I think I got rid of it before I think when we got to Kennedy Meadows, I mailed my fanny pack back home. I think it was because I like having everything within reach, but like also the whole like one of the things that's appealing to me about having a frameless pack is like not having the hip belt.
Yeah.
So the fact that I had something around my hips still was kind of like I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. So if you're not funny about having stuff around your hips, then I think a fanny pack would be beneficial. But for me, it was just kind of just not wanting to have something around me. So
yeah,
I think it has its pros and its cons, but I think in the end I'm not a big fanny pack guy.
Okay. Well, that was my next question. Like, would you take one on the next hike or so? Maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, do you remember Flutter?
Yeah.
Flutter. So Flutter made me a new pack. And the pack that I haven't gotten to use it yet with the quarantine and everything, but the new pack that he made me has like daisy chains down the straps.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about getting like some things to put on the straps. So instead of having a fanny pack, I'll have like pockets like on my straps to
where
my phone and like my wallet and like all those things. So.
Okay. I see. Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, like, I got one, like the Patagonia fanny pack for last Christmas. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of wondering, you know, because I was thinking to go on the CDT this year, so I was thinking to take it with me and then try it. You know, if I don't like it, I can ship it back home. But yeah, I was wondering if it's like a good thing, pros and cons about like having a fanny pack, because I was wondering that going downhill is gonna just like boom, boom, boom. You know, just moving around and just around my body, my hips. So I was kind of wondering if it's not too much or not too, I don't know, just annoying.
No, I don't think so. I think to me the only con was just having something on that I didn't want on.
I see. Yeah.
So if you don't care about that, then I think you'd probably be okay.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll see. I'm going to try because I saw like so many people having like, I mean, so many people having quite a lot of people like having, you know, fanny pack, especially the people who are smoking, right?
Yeah. They had to have everything within reach, their lighter.
Yeah, like fast. Like that was just funny. Okay, cool. So just to finish the podcast, because like every good thing has an end, so can you tell us about like the next challenges, like next trail you want to do, or I don't know, maybe outside of the hiking world, like what do you want to do in the next few months, Gero?
Yeah, so I guess right now it's still kind of weird because with quarantine, like they're still encouraging people not to hike. But I'm actually, I got a job teaching, so I want to be a teacher long term. I got a job teaching in Japan. And so I start that in September, hopefully, you know, if everything goes with the quarantine, if everything goes according to plan. So I'm supposed to start in September teaching English. I don't know what city I'll live in yet. They're supposed to give me like a placement or whatever, but so I'm starting that, but there's this guy named Halfway Anywhere. That's like his blog. I don't know his real name, but he's a thru hiker. But he worked in Japan for a while, and he did like a 400. It's like a, I think it's around 400 miles, but it's like a route that goes through all of the Japanese Alps, and then it finishes at Mount Fuji. And when I visited Japan to stay with one of my best friends in college was Japanese, and I went to stay with his family one summer for a few weeks, and we did like a 40-mile section of this guy's route. And so I think hopefully if I had enough vacation days someday next year or whenever, when I'm living in Japan, I would like to do that route and do the 400 miles because the Japanese Alps are incredible. I mean, they look, you know, they're really similar to what we saw like in the North Cascades in Washington. They're really jagged and really, really dramatic. So I think that's probably the next thing that I would like to do, because I just love Japan and the mountains there are just so unique.
That's good. And then
I think also as far as American trails, yeah, I would like to do the CDT and the PNT, but that's further down the road, I guess. But for now, yeah, I'll be in Japan, and then I'll be so close to China. You know, maybe my Chinese visa is still good for 5 more years, so maybe I will be able to do some hikes in China too. So.
All right. And what your parents think about that, like you move to Japan? Like I know you're very close to your parents, right? Like.
Yeah, we're pretty close. So I think I mean, I've been living in Indiana now for like almost a year, and they've been okay with that, so I think, I mean, if anything, I think for my mom it's a good chance for her to come visit me, and like I think her and her sisters want to come like on a vacation to Japan and stuff. So so if anything, it'll be a good opportunity for that. But
yeah, it's gonna be a good reason to visit you and visit Japan. So
yeah, you can. I'll you know, as long as I'm there, you have a place to stay if you want to come to Japan. So
yeah, why not, man? Like that's I mean, it's sad. Like I mean, this pandemic, like the COVID, just had to reshuffle everything and had to cancel my CDT. But you know, we'll see. You know, we never know. Maybe I'm sure everything happens for reasons, and we gonna. Maybe we're gonna do something, but we said that thing together, right? We're gonna have to do another like few weeks trail, or maybe a long distance hiking trail again one day.
Yeah,
and, definitely. I definitely want to do that thing with you again. That was so much fun to do on the PCT. So Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, you could join me for my trail in Japan.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, why not? You're all night. Yeah. I mean, I've been talking and recording this podcast. Radish was telling me that he wants to do more navigation stuff, and he wants to do like kind of creating his own path and trying to create a route. So he said, yeah, if you want to come one day. Salty was saying pretty much the same thing. So I've got a few guys, I know I can go for a lot of fun hiking. So who knows? Yeah, why not? Maybe Japan sounds a lot of fun, man. Like, and there are not that many people who are doing these kind of routes. So
yeah. This route is one of those like kind of it's not a trail, you know. It's kind of you'll be able to develop your navigation skills and stuff.
That's cool.
That's kind of more of like what I've been interested in doing, you know, because build like some skills outside of just hiking, you know. So
true. Yeah. That's the thing, yeah. Reddish was saying the same thing. He said, like, you know, I love hiking and I love like just following the routes, but I would like to improve my skills in the navigation and trying to learn how to, read the landscapes, I have in front of me, just trying to understand, you know, I can get this ridge line and then I can go down and up. And so,
yeah,
who knows?
I remember like Salty talking about that too on his podcast with you. Like he was talking about like knowing the landscape more, and like, you know, he talked about how we walk through these forests and we don't even know the names of all the trees and we don't know the names of all the birds and things. And just like, I think the navigation is part of that too, part of that same skill set. And like in that way, I think you'll be more appreciative of the area that you get to. You know, you'll be more respectful and more appreciative of where you are if you know it and you understand it and stuff. So,
and I remember like having like, I think I was reading something on Andrew Skoka, and that guy was saying that you have to know where you pitch your tent, you know, like the type of terrain, the type of, you know, like the wood, like the trees, like what you have. And if you can read, you know, like the nature, you can find the best spot maybe to pitch your tent or to take water and stuff like that. So you have to improve your skills, and that guy is a god, right? In terms of hiking and stuff like that, right?
He's a badass, man.
Well, that's good. Like that guy was talking about the same thing as Salty was mentioning, and he was kind of I was reading that blog post he had on his website, and that was interesting to see, you know, like he was talking about that. He said, like, you guys have to learn the next step maybe is like to learn how to read stuff, you know, when you go hiking. And like there are so many things, like you said, like I think you said that thing right at the beginning of the podcast, like doing the PCT, like you go across like so many different landscapes and alpine stuff and then desert and stuff like that. So and there are so many things I didn't know. I was just walking through it, and I was just like, didn't know the name of the trees and the birds and stuff like that. So
yeah,
will be interesting to develop this aspect of the hike as well.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I think we're done with the podcast. Thank you so much, Gato. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
I was very happy. I can't wait. I'm gonna do the editing right away, and I'm gonna post that things. And so hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you, Gato, again. Hope you had a lot of fun. I know you were just waking up, and that was. But thank you for being here, man. That was.
I'm wide awake, man. I was excited.
Cool. Yeah, I was.
Thank you for having me on, but also thank you for. I can't tell you thank you enough times for taking care of me in Old Station. So,
yeah,
another thing that
I'm sure you would have done the same. And I was kind of feeling that I had to do this thing. And I don't know, I didn't think of this twice. And I was kind of, you know, I just have to do it. And that was good. And now we are like just so many months after that, and it was just. Still talking about it, and it makes me just proud. Like I've met someone like you on the trail, and we know that's gonna be lifetime friendships. That's a good thing. So thank you for sharing everything you know about hiking. And like, I know this is like me. This is a thing like you like a lot, you love. And so thank you so much. And I hope that like some people is gonna learn a lot of new things, and they're gonna be a little bit careful on the way they go into, you know, like for hiking. There, it's a lot of fun, but there are a lot of things to consider. And and for your safety and for the safety of the other people as well. So yeah, be careful, guys. But like, go hiking. That there's not much I can say. Just enjoy. And hopefully, like, the pandemic thing is gonna be away, and we can go back, you know, hiking again. So thank you guys for listening to that podcast. Thank you again, Gato. And yes. Stay tuned for the next podcast, and goodbye, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.